safer about a day or two ago. It's fast. Anyone got it for free at the Makolet 2 days ago in the morning. It is a safer called Ohalei Halacha. The background of Ohalei Halacha, I want to describe it and give some psakim in regards to Hilchos Purim, is that the Sefer Pini Halacha, those were always wildly, wildly popular svarim written by Rabbi Elazar Melamed. I did, in the last bunch of months plus, some opposition to Rabbi Melamed's svarim in Pini Halacha. That opposition is for two potential reasons. One is because there are those who are increasingly less comfortable with Rav Melamed, because Rav Melamed has come out pro a variety of changes in the way that conversion should be done, and the way that we should be acting in terms of Reformed Jews and the like, and therefore there's been some opposition to Rav Melamed for that reason. There's been some opposition also to his Sfarim, in particular some of his Sfarim and Hilchos Nida and the like, because Rav Melamed perceived as being increasingly independent and at times increasingly makil in his Sfarim, which means that some of the community that for a long time very much encouraged the learning of Pini Halacha. So now there's been a little bit of pushback on that. We comment not on the issue itself, but rather on a new sefer which has come out as a result of that. Yaakov Ariel, the chief rabbi, was rabbi in Ramat Gan, and one of the absolute giants of the Dati Lumi Tzibur here in Eretz Yisrael. He is an absolute, he's remarkably, remarkably impressive as a Talmid Chacham. But they started putting out one small Kuntos Hanukkah time, and now another one Purim time, is essentially modeled after elements of Pini Halakha, but they put it out with, again, a variety of different discussions, what it means in a second, as well as a lot of the individual psakim of Yaakov Ariel. The Sefer itself is on Hilchos Purim is about 78 pages or so. It's a little bit under 80 pages. It is like Pini Halakha in the sense that the goal of it is to be as accessible as possible, which means that somebody, even if they are somewhat less familiar with the Halakhas, get a very nice overview of the halakhas relating to Purim. There may be nuanced questions or very detailed questions that a person may not get the answer to here, but certainly a person does have the ability to get a nice overview of things. Similar to Pini Halakha, I think, although I will be honest and say I have not learned that much Pini Halakha in my life, but similar to a variety of Sfarim, that there are discussions of not only the practices of Ashkenazim, but also the practices of Sfarim, to make it more relevant and more accessible to others. There are also some discussions at the beginning of certain prakim of a couple paragraphs of some of the machshava relevant in order to make it as easily accessible as possible. It's also written in a very simple, clear, modern Hebrew, and that way more people can learn it if they are so inclined. Because of its range, there are some sfarim that get quoted fairly often, or some poskim that don't get quoted often in the other world. So if Mordechai Eliyahu, the former Rishon Letzion, one of the great party poskim of the 20th century, so they quote often of Mordechai Eliyahu, a lot of quotations up from Tav Chaim and from Ben Ishchai, a variety of discussions here. It is somewhat, what I would say is, some of the discussions they elaborate on in the footnotes and some not, often explaining some of them in Haggim of what we do. There'll be longer conversations. The long conversations about, you know, clapping at Haman and the like. The Ben Ishchai's practice of only doing it for the first and the last. And Ravadia and some others that may have expressed reservations about it. And those that defended the Minhag and some discussions about that. Giving us explanations for three Mahalchim and why it is that we say the Aseres Bnei Haman all in one Neshima. Is why we say it ourselves instead of just hearing from the Baal Koreh, if it's because we want to make sure, as some of the posts can point out, that it's very hard to hear all the words, be saying it so quickly, and we'll make sure that we're Yotzei by saying it ourselves. If it's because the Aruch HaShulchan says the Iker Nes, the Iker Yeshua was at that time, and therefore we should all say it ourselves. If it's because the very famous Tzavas Paneach, that if you hear it from someone else, even if you're Yotzei through Shomei Ka'ona doesn't make it as if you said it all in one breath. The person has to say it all in one breath for that particular reason. Even though the Sefer primarily, its goal is to be as accessible as possible, it is also a great resource from the Pesachim of Yaakov Ariel. So I thought that in the next 5 or 6 minutes, I would go through a bunch of Pesachim of Yaakov Ariel relevant to Purim. Some of them are relevant to us right now, and some of them most definitely not. But they're all a little bit intriguing, and a couple which are very, very important. One of the reasons why we'll have one of the Pesachim about this, Yaakov Ariel is a great posseg. One of the things he does is, in the world of Eretz Yisrael, a lot of complex shilas and yelling Zrayim. And it is Tshuvas of Golas Torah, which we have downstairs in the Shirim, his Tshuvas. Some of the volumes deal very, very extensively with halakhas of Inyani Zra'im and the like. And much as we may think that Purim has no halakhas relevant to it, we'll see at least one that is very important. But we'll go through some of the Pesachim of Yaakov Ariel that are important to know, because he's really the one, now he didn't write these Svarim, but he is the one in many ways who they're looking to as their gadol in these tzaddikim. So one we mentioned was a shaila that a mu'beres is not fasting times Esther. The shaila is at what stage in the game is a person considered to be a mu'beres. So Avadia and Chazon Avadia understood that's only after your first trimester, unless you feel particularly weak, that a woman should still be fasting, ideally if she's pregnant, even in the first trimester. Dr. Ariel thought that once she knows about, once she knows that she is pregnant, then already she wouldn't have to fast times Esther. That is psak number one. Psak number two we referenced also, which is at Machlokes HaPoskim, at what stage is a woman still considered to be a meineka? Is she still considered to be nursing? If it's within the first 24 months of the baby being born, but she's not technically nursing, is she still called a meineka? Dr. Ariel is actually machmir on that question. He maintains that when women were still very weak, within the first 24 months after giving a child, maybe generations ago or whatever it was, maybe more of a child. But nowadays, we see our women, even within the first 24 months, when they stop nursing, they're feeling physically strong enough, and certainly they would, he suggests, be obligated in fasting at that particular time. Sock number three, which is very important, first has to hear every word of the Megillah. What happens if you daydream a little bit during the Megillah? You're up in the morning, you're davening Vasikin, it's late at night, and you're very excited, looking around at costumes, and you daydream a little bit. So what exactly is the halacha? Do you have to go hear Megillas Esther again or not? So Yaakov Ariel, the quote here was mechala between two kinds of daydreaming, and many of us may identify with this. One kind of daydream is where you are mamish in a different world. You are daydreaming, and you totally lose focus, for where you are. You're just staring into space, and you wake up a couple minutes later. So then you really, strictly speaking, should have to hear Mikra Megillah again. If it's the kind of daydreaming where you're thinking about other kinds of things, but as an example, you're still like following along in the Megillah, you're still like sort of listening, but you're also thinking about random thoughts along the way, so then you would still be Yotzei, a person where we would fulfill their obligation, and you would not have to restart, you would not have to hear Mikra Megillah again. That would be Psak number three. Psak number four relates to another question that's intriguing. The Achronim debated, how do we relate to things like microphones or hearing aids, or if it's read over the radio or read over Zoom, what exactly is the status of that as far as Mikra Megillah goes? That was a major machlokas amongst poskim. A major machlokas amongst poskim. Shlomo Zalman spoke about it. Mikas Shlomo, Kelkav, Simon Test, Rav Avadia, the Mikas Yitzchak, many poskim speak about this, and the Pesukei Tshuva summarizes the different opinions. One thing that Rav Ariel maintains is that while he thinks all else being equal, it is better to be machmir. He himself, in Be'olah Shel Torah, happens to be machmir when it comes to hearing aids between two kinds of situations. Sometimes there's a hearing aid where you would not have been able to hear it without that hearing aid, where you really need it and the entire, everything you're hearing is a result of that hearing aid. Then he thinks the person may not really be Yotzei necessarily, the din of Mikra Megillah. They'd be putter, obviously, because they couldn't hear. But you wouldn't really be Yotzei. If, however, you can hear, if, however, a person has the ability to hear, just the hearing aid makes it a little bit more doable for them. It makes it more accessible. It allows them to hear in a bit of a better way. So then suggests that Dr. Ariel, a person would in fact be Yotzei as a result. That was Psak number four, I think. Psak number five we will go to. Sorry, 1 second. Let me just... Psak number five, what happens if you are... There is a Machlokes HaRishonim, some of us know. We say a Brach of Shechianu. We read Megillah, the Gemara tells Megillah on Daf Dalet, both at night and during the day. At night, for sure, we say a Brach of Shechianu. Do you say a Brach of Shechianu when you read during the daytime also? That is a Machlokes between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. Ashkenazim say a Brach of Shechianu during the daytime Megillah reading as well. Sephardim do not. What do you do if you are at a minyan that is doing differently than your own practice? You are someone who is Sephardi davening Ashkenazi minyan, Ashkenazi davening in a Sephardi minyan. So they quote here from the statement of Aleihu Lo Yibol from the Pesachim of Rav Shlomo Zalman, that if you're an Ashkenazi davening in a Sephardi minyan, you should try to say the bracha of Shehachianu before the Baal Kori said the brachas, because you really do be paskin. You would say Shechianu, so you make your own private Shechianu. What if you are a Sephardi davening in an Ashkenazi minyan, and they're going to be saying the bracha? So Dr. Ariel Paskin, that even though you yourself hold not to say that bracha, he holds that you should answer amen to the bracha of Ashkenazi if it's there. That happens often. That often you will, we have this a little bit on Rosh Hashanah at times, and it, but in a different way. It happens on Rosh Chodesh here sometimes. Someone who's Sephardi is davening for the amen, they'll often have an Ashkenazi person get up and say the bracha on Hallel. Ashkenazim say the bracha. So if that happens in a minion here, which can happen sometimes, we have some Sephardi laning Ashkenazi, and it gets mixed up. Raphael points out that if you're Sephardi, you would say Amen. If you're Ashkenazi, that being a Sephardi minion, the posture is that you should say the Brach of Shachianu. But when you say the Brach of Shachianu, you won't have time to say it in between Sha'as and Nisim and the actual Megillah. So you would say Shachianu before they even get and say any of their brachas. That is what you would do. The next psak is as follows, which I think is a really sort of is an intriguing one. Let's go with when it comes to matanos le'evyonim. So I'll put it as follows. When it comes to children, what's the din of matanos le'evyonim? So what do you do if you have a kid hashdas? They're putter from giving matanos le'evyonim. That's a discussion. Since they don't have any of their own money, the post could point out to Eishal Avram, kids don't have to give matanos le'evyonim, they're pater from it. Rakav Ariel suggests, I'll quote on him, you should encourage children to give a symbolic kind of a matana. It's good to get in the habit to give your kids a little bit of money so they can at least give something, and that can be as productive as possible. Here's the next shaila, a very practical one here in Eretz Yisrael, which is following. Many of the aniyim in Eretz Yisrael, anyone know what number we're up to? Seven? Psak number seven. Many of us may know that in Eretz Yisrael, you often have aniyim who live in minus. They have their bank account, and their bank account has negative money in that. How exactly does that work? The answer is not well. But if they have a situation like that, here's the following shaila. Are you able to, Rav Yashiv, hold, as did some others, that a person would be able to fulfill the din of, or at least some of the folks in debate, could you fulfill the mitzvah of Yonim with a direct bank transfer? The answer is pashtus, you could. If you want to donate money to an ani, you know of an ani, you give a direct bank transfer. One direct, Raphael, what about the following case? What if the poor person is living in minus, and therefore when you give him money, what you're actually doing is, you are now, he has less of a negative on his bank account, which can often happen in Eretz Yisrael. Many, many, many of the aniyim, their bank account is in the negative. What's the shaila there? So you may not be yotzim atanos le'evyonim for some poskim by paying off the debt of a poor person. I have to give him access to money. Paying off debt, your own chov, may not be good enough atanos le'evyonim. The back of our reality, the following distinction, which is very important, Lemaisa, for tzedakah organizations that are going to fulfill matanos le'evyonim by bank transfers to those that are poor, which is the following. If they are in a particular kind of bank or a particular kind of minus, where as a result of the money you give them, they would not be able to take any additional money out of their bank account, they wouldn't be able to have access of those funds, then you may not be owed matanos le'evyonim to give them the money directly. If, however, it's often the case, where even if they're in minus, if you put more money in, they will be able to have access to take that money out of the bank. How that works is being in minus is one of the wonders of the world, but then you would still be yotze, your thea of matanos le'evyonim. He suggests a very, very important, question. We'll go with, that's thought number seven. Well, we'll go with ten. Thought number eight, which is an important one, relates to women or couples giving mishloach manos. So a couple gives mishloach manos. So my wife and I are going to give mishloach manos. Do we have to give separate mishloach manos, or can we give it on behalf of us as a couple? So a variety of poskim maintain, and my wife and I can give it together with someone's almond, but we should make sure to give enough for both of us individually. So we should be giving to multiple families so we can be yotzei together our own key of mishloach manos. Dr. Ariel suggests that if there may be an extra hither, if possible, at times, for the wife to give, if she knows there's like an almana in the area, and there's a person there that she has more of a connection with. So even though in general, sometimes we give by shliach, even though in general, sometimes we give the couple as a whole, that it is roi at times for a woman to give directly, it may be better even for her own obligation to give to one of her friends, someone that's alone, someone that's whatever, that could benefit from it. So that would be an extra kiyum, and that would be very, very important. That was psach number eight. That was psach number eight. Psach number nine is a very important one. Maybe we'll even end at nine. We'll see. Psach number nine is the following shaila, which comes up. So you go to the makolet and you want to give shalach manos. You want to give shalach manos, and you want to give a nice shalach manos. You want to give it with fruit. You want to give it with vegetables, and those vegetables in our makolet are often kados bit kedusha shviyas. They're otzer beizdin. Maybe they're yivul nachri, but we hold here in Shalvim that even yivul nachri with chazanish, we're machmir that they have kedusha shviyas. So what do you do? Can you give shalach manos with kedusha shviyas products? What exactly do we hold?
So Zalman maintains that a person, Halicha Shlomo and Perikit Test, if you had, he is matir to give shalchmanos that are, it has to do such things to him. Yaakov Ariel and Ravavad, Rav Ariel and Sufa, Ola Shal Torah, Chela Gimel, he happens to maintain that a person ideally should not be giving shalchmanos, which there, if it is Kadosh, Big, Kedushas, however, he is machalic in the following. It's a very important kila, which has a couple of contexts. There are often two tiers of shalach manos that we give. We give our primary shalach manos. We give a nicer tier of shalach manos that you want to give to really be yotzei with more kavadik food that could be used for the suda. And then we often have our like tier two shalach manos, which are like the smaller things that we bring over. The smaller things. Oh, a couple, you know, a can of soda and a ragla, which is not necessary. So when it comes to your tier one, where you're really being yotzei shalach manos, so then it becomes all the more important, it becomes all the more relevant to make sure that you're going to be giving it. He maintains not that which is covered in shvias, but he does think that if you're going to be giving for your tier two, that there may be more room or more capacity to be able to give in a case like that. When it comes to Matanos Lev Yonim, so one additional factor, which is very much there, relates to the following. This is talk number 10. A couple that gives Matanos Lev Yonim, so I have a chiyuv Matanos Lev Yonim, as well as my wife has a chiyuv to give Matanos Lev Yonim. So part of the question is, can I, so a lot of the posts can maintain that I can just give it on behalf of my wife, and as often the case, let's say I'm giving it to the Ani, I'm giving it to God by Tzedakah, the Dr. Ariel, as long as I have in mind that I'm giving it for my wife, I don't have to verbally specify at the time that I'm giving this not only for me, but I'm also giving it for my wife. There's no need to verbally specify that. That would not be necessary. Those are temp sons of Dr. Ariel, all relevant to the halachas of Purim. Here, the Sefer is an intriguing Sefer, an easier one to go through. This is much longer than I thought it would be. I apologize for that. But hopefully at least some basic background.